The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is produced independently and locally in Spokane, Washington by Spokecast Studios. Our city, our stories. Visit www.spokecast.com to learn more about how you can start your very own podcast today. Thank you to Jinx Universe and Position Music for letting The Perimeter use the song Let's Do It Again from Jinx's album Make It Look Good.
I want to share a local secret that everyone needs to know about. Owens Farms Piedmontese. For over 35 years, the Owens family has bred and sold a select amount of their premier Piedmontese beef by word of mouth. And now, for the first time, is being made available to the public through our partnership. Go to ofp.farm or click the link in the show description to reserve your half or whole order of premier Piedmontese beef today. There's only a limited amount of Owens Farms Piedmontese beef available, so make sure you don't miss out. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is proudly presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is brought to you in sponsorship with Delicious Hamburgers. Did you know Delicious Hamburgers and fries are the freshest in Spokane? Their hamburgers are never frozen, and that's because it tastes better. There's not even a freezer in the restaurant. Their fries are always made to order and never set under a heat lamp. It's differences like this you can truly taste. Next time you're craving the freshest hamburgers and fries, head to the corner of Augusta and Division and ask for the Perimeter Combo, a triple delicious hamburger with grilled onions, pickles, and special sauce. It also comes with fries and your choice of a milkshake. Delicious. Taste the difference.
Let me introduce you to the Spokane Workers Co-op, a locally based worker-owned holding company whose mission it is to increase access to living wages, workplace democracy, and autonomy, and to create the sort of lifelong career trajectories that are increasingly uncommon for the majority of people in America. The worker owners of SWC, regardless of which business they work, are equal co-owners of the entire holding company, providing them not just direct ownership of the fruits of their own labor, but ownership in a diversified and resilient portfolio of businesses dedicated to serving Spokane and the Inland Northwest. SWC also buys traditional businesses. SWC buys traditional businesses like LLCs, partnerships, and sole proprietorships, for example, from owners who are ready to retire and who want to make sure the employees who help them build their business are taken care of after the owner leaves. Learn more at www.spokane.coop. And if you're an owner interested in talking about selling, email SWC at team@spokane.coop. That is team@spokane.coop.
Let's do it again.
All right, we're back with episode 3 of The Perimeter, season 2, presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese. Recap of the PK85. Looking forward to Baylor's upcoming matchup that we have. Glad to be back, dude. Like, it was a long time to be in one city. I like Portland, but I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, from Wednesday to Sunday night.
Sunday night, yeah. That's a lot of hotel room sitting there and then wait until 7 p.m. to go drink beers. Like, it gets old.
Yeah,
quick.
I was gonna ask, did you find any good places to go eat?
I went to, on Thanksgiving, went to Jake's. It's like Jake's Crab Shack or something. It's pretty famous there.
Yeah,
really good. The some Gonzaga people took us, their families were going to, but they took us kind of stragglers who didn't have our families, so me and Huddy went
nice
for a Thanksgiving dinner, but we had seafood. It was really good. Nice. Yeah, we had a good time. And then some of the bars and stuff are opening back up. The last time I was there was last year, and it was coming off COVID, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everything was kind of slowly. So yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we found some spots.
Nice. I got to start by asking you, on a scale from 1 to 10, how are you feeling about Gonzaga right now?
I feel good. I mean, I probably like an 8. I mean, like a B plus. B. That's not on like where I think they can be or like how good they are. It's just how I feel about it. It's not like in years past where we're, lighting the world on fire, but also there's a lot of good signs for
this team to grow and continue to improve. And guys showed that this weekend. Mm. So yeah, just to go over like the, you know, the start of the tournament, obviously we played Portland State on Thursday, Thanksgiving night, and the game didn't tip until like 10 because we got slid from the game before. Mm-hmm. And it was just a weird atmosphere because we were playing in Veterans, you know, the old Coliseum there, which is actually like a historical landmark because it's a fucking dump in there, man. I'm not even kidding. It's old as shit. Like, it's old.
And yeah.
It's just echoey and concrete and just weird. And like, we call the games from the top level. You know, and we were like, why don't they tear this place down? Not in a bad way, but it's like a historical landmark, so it can't be. And they still use it for hockey, like the Winterhawks or whatever.
Yeah.
Play the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. So it's weird playing there because it's a weird backdrop. Fans are all scattered. You know what I'm saying? It's like kind of, it's kind of like a GA where you just kind of sit wherever you want. Mm-hmm. It's kind of different. But playing that late was odd. I was a little concerned going into it just from a fan's perspective, that we were going to be, you know, heavy legs, routine wasn't going to be there. Obviously we didn't have like turkey dinner or anything like that. The players didn't, you know what I'm saying? You still do mm-hmm. your game routine, but it's just moved back so much further, almost 4 hours to normal 6 o'clock start time. You know, and then earlier in that day, Duke had issues with, Portland, was it? Yeah, it was Portland. And then, Carolina had issues with Oregon State, you know what I'm saying? So like, it was like in the cards that this could be a challenge because Portland State was hungry. Mm-hmm. Really impressed with how our guys came out energy wise. They kind of put the game away early. I think they went on a 46-14 run or something like that in the first half, like the last 60 points or whatever.
Wow.
It was 47-13 or something like that, if my memory serves. So I was pleased with the effort. It was one of those games, you know, you never tell your guys to look ahead, but you know, they were probably prepping for Purdue or West Virginia those 2 days before, but still like, hey, this is what Portland State does. All right, let's do what these other teams do. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize you kind of have to do that in these type of tournaments. And everybody, you know, conventional wisdom is like, well, you're teaching your guys or you're putting it in their back of their minds to overlook a team. But if you're good enough and you're well coached and you have mature guys, which we do, that you can do that, but you have to do it. But you also, you know, get worried a little bit about, you know, the overlooking factor, or where you just give a team belief. I always say that you want to take away a team's beliefs, mm-hmm. Early in those type of games, kind of remind them, you know, they're good players. Obviously Portland State is trying to establish a basketball program. It's a great area for recruiting. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You can find diamonds in the rough. There's plenty of them in that state, but just kind of remind them you're in the big sky. You know what I'm saying? We're top mm-hmm. tier, blah, blah, blah. So I was impressed with how our guys came out. I thought our perimeter guys played well. Malachi played well that game. He had 20 something off the bench. Hunter Silas played good off the bench. He had like 12, 4, 6. Obviously, Drew did his thing. You know what I mean? So it was nice to get off the floor kind of early, quote unquote, in that game. Mm-hmm. You get what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Just and guys weren't stressed, or we didn't have to play heavy minutes to secure a win. You know, like being up 25 is a huge difference to being up like 12 late in a game, because you kind of have to keep your guys in when it's like that. And that's what those other teams I mentioned before had to do. And they kind of had to stretch their lineups a little bit further than I guarantee there's, you know, coaching staff sort of like. So then, you know, when we're doing our pregame, obviously on the air, we're an hour pregame show. So we usually watch, you know, we're watching and calling the game before. And I was super impressed with Purdue, and this is my thoughts before we played them, right? Mm-hmm. Is the matchup with the ED kid, I was like, this is going to be interesting. And then I like their two freshman guards, a Smith and the Lawyer kid on the outside. And then I was just really impressed with how hard they played and the actions they ran. So I knew coming into that game that it was going to be a difficult matchup. We don't struggle, but the playing the Big Ten punch you in the mouth teams are never our forte. I mean, Michigan State did that to us this year, and we had to rally down 12 on the aircraft carrier to win that game.
Yeah.
So it's not, we're not, you know, that's not our style. And if we can impose our will with our style, it it helps, but also like a lot of times in those games, it turns into kind of, you know, bog down, slow down. We're going to foul you or we're going to push you around and the refs don't call it. So going into that game, I thought, you know, I had some friends who were like, well, what do you think about the game? We're just going to run them out of the gym. I was like, hey, man, this one is going to be interesting just because of the size and the skill that I saw the night before. So I thought, you know, to start that game, we go up 14-7 and there was a big play in the moment. And what was great about that start was Nolan Hickman hits two threes. He's starting to feel good about himself. Mm. You know, he's played well to start this season. I think people have wanted to see a little bit more from the offensive side, but I think he's trying to figure out, you know, how to flatten defenses, how to get in the creases, how to make the right decisions. And then defensively, you know, you got to be able to guard ball screens kind of by yourself because we don't switch anymore mm-hmm. with our bigs. Keep Drew, you know, Drew just not really a switch type of guy. And, you know, like what we had with Chet last year, we could switch and it's a lot easier to guard those type of actions. Mm-hmm. So I thought defensively, he looked good early to start that game, but there was that, you know, 14-7, we come out banging a couple threes, crowds into it, go to the first media timeout. They start 1-for-8 from three and they all took good shots, but it was like, all right, like maybe they had an off night because they were shooting, I think it was 34-35% as a team, which isn't awful. But they're not like super lights out on you. You know what I'm saying? But when we get a 1-for-8 start, the point I'm trying to get to is we get to that first media timeout. We're up 14-7 and then we go on like a 4-minute drought where we can't score. They climb themselves back into it. I think one of the biggest plays of that sequence was when Malachi checked in, he comes down, hits Julian Strother for a three, and he's going the opposite way after he passes, and they call a charge. And I'm just so sick of seeing those type of plays in college basketball where they don't ref on advantage, and that's not even like a soccer fan term. It's just like if you watch an NBA game, like if a guy, let's say I rebounded on my end and we're at 90 feet and somebody slaps down on my hand, but I don't lose the ball. They just like keep the game going. Like here, they'll be like, beep, foul.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I throw it to Julian Strother. I'm going away from the basket after I make my pass. I'm heading back the other way. The guy's standing there and falls down. That's not a foul. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. It didn't affect the play.
Doesn't affect the play.
Yeah. And so we get that call that takes that wipes that off the board. And Julian struggled that night, but let's say he scores that early. Maybe the momentum changes, you know, and then I thought I liked our, you know, defensive scheme. I thought it was going to be the same as when we played Shibwe in Kentucky with, what I mean by that is using Anton as kind of a you know, defense first on his end of the floor and then whatever you can give a scoring, but you got to have an A-plus game defensively. We were doing the 3-quarter front, you know, try to push him off his line. And I thought for the most part, to begin the game, we did a good job on him. We kept the ball out of there. You know, we helped from the weak side because you have to always, you know, with a guy that's 7'4", which you never see in college basketball. That's what people don't understand. It's like in the NBA, obviously, you'll see those type of guys and you have game plans for them and then you have bodies for that. Mm-hmm. Like every team at least has one footer.
Yeah, right.
Right. Whether he plays or not, you have one. Mm-hmm. Right. Or you have and then you have a plan. And then usually you have a double team package that you can use. But you never see 7-4. So I thought trying to keep the ball out with three quarters front with a bracket help on the weak side was the right thing to do. And like I said, that first media timeout was great. And then, you know, we just went on this scoring drought and then they started knocking down shots. Heading into the halftime, we were down 5 and I said it on air. I'm like, we could have been down 15. So I, you know, cause we just got such bogged down, you know, with how our offense was moving. I liked their plan. I'm talking about, Purdue, you know, with Edie, I knew we were going to put him in ball screen action and DHOs, dribble handoffs. And he always just plugs. And what I mean by plug is you just sink in the paint mm-hmm. and they kind of give you that 12 to 15 footer. And we came off and we didn't shoot it at the start, you know, or if we did shoot it, we shot it kind of like hesitant and we missed them. And that's what you give up. But also nowadays, A lot of these kids have been told that's a bad shot, which sometimes you just have to take what the defense gives you. So to only be down five going into that half and playing very poorly was, I thought, a win. You know, and I know people around town were probably freaking out or watching the game because, you know, they're only 24th in the country. We should be blowing them out. And it's like, no, this is, you know, Matt Painter's been there 18 years. He's won some Big Ten titles. He's obviously been in the NCAA tournament. They thought they had a Final Four team last year, which they did, and they got upset. But like, they have a really good, his scheme is good offensively. And then, like I said, you have a 7'4 guy that's averaging 22 and, like, you know, 15 or something like that, 12 to 15.
Yeah.
And efficient. It's not just volume. You know, so very good basketball club. So getting in the second half, you know, the start that we had coming out of the time or coming out of the halftime was not great and was not ideal. You know, they come down banging a couple threes. I mentioned earlier, they go 1 for 8 from three to start the game. The rest of the game, they go 9 for 18. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, if you look at the total box, you're like, well, we kept them to around 35 to 38% or whatever. There's like, well, the rest of that game, they shot 50%.
Well, that's why when you say, like, we're lucky that we weren't down by 15, because they weren't hitting threes.
And they weren't making shots.
Yeah. How difficult, I mean, it just, when Edie went down, it just seemed like they just let him score. Like, explain the defense of, like, what I know, what's Gonzaga doing there, like, to, like, just let him score? Like, as a layman, I don't really understand. Like, it just looks like we're just giving up. Like, what's going on there, though?
So, like, what you're trying to do is stand him up and get him off his normal catch, which probably be, you know, 8 to 12 feet around the block area. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can stand him up, but obviously you can't dislodge guys nowadays, which is the right way to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were doing a three-quarter front. That means, you know, it's not a chest front where it's full. You're trying to keep the ball out, but then if he catches, you can circle back and then guard him. But he's so big that he bounced down and went left shoulder, right hand, jump hook the whole time.
Yeah.
And you don't see that. Like, we have nothing to contest that anyway. We did start double teaming him, and I was impressed with him as a player. He found the open guy every single time. He never turned it over, so we had to get out of it. I mean, I think they hit one or two threes or got really good shots every time we doubled off him. We started doing that in the second half because I guarantee that was an adjustment we were trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
But he just was such a great force inside. I mean, we held him to 7 rebounds. I know that sounds funny, but like, he's like 15 a game, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like, we did a good job with him on the glass, but he ended up with 23 points. And I think he was 10 for 16 or something like that. So like, highly efficient. Moved better than I've seen a big, because he's like 300 pounds too.
Yeah, he's humongous.
He's huge. You know what I'm saying? Like, big trunk and can move. Like, the closest I've ever seen to a guy moving that well with that same body type, and I'm not comparing him to him, but it's like Yao Ming. Yao Ming's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Like, an all-time great, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he moved like that, but Yao Ming was like 7'6" and could shoot jumpers. But you get what I'm saying? But it's like, you first look, oh yeah, this guy could barely walk and chew gum. It's like, okay, you know, like, he can actually move, catch and finish. And it reminded me of that, where like, your best, biggest defender looks like a midget or a small person, I should say.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, holy cow.
There's not many former Zags that I could even think that could even guard someone like that straight up, like maybe Shimmick.
Yeah, Shimmy would be the only one. You're actually, that's a very good point. Like, because size wise, because he's 300 pounds, but it's not, you know, like overweight or out of shape. It's like, just his natural, he looks fit.
Yeah.
And he's just big.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was highly impressed with him. Obviously, he wasn't, you know, the only factor. Like I mentioned, the 9 for 18. I thought the Smith point guard was excellent. I mean, if you look at our backcourt that game, Nolan Hickman has 15, plays fantastic, probably one of his best games of the year. I think Julian Strother goes 1 for 6. Hunter Silas goes 1 for 5. Malachi goes 1 for 5. Our perimeter guys didn't play good that game.
No.
And they obviously understand that, but we didn't have a chance if they're not making shots and that type of deal. Rasheer Bolton was 4 for 12 that game, but it was the three makes that he caught up when he was at one time, and then 1 for 8 were late when it, you know, the game was kind of out of question.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if your backcourt does that And their backcourt was, you know, I think they shot like 52% combined, and it was something like 13-1 turnovers. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. they just played great, and there were two freshmen, like, not supposed to play that good. We didn't really have a shot. The bright side to that is, I know this seems funny, but like, they just did the same thing to Duke, and Duke's got bigger bodies as far as post game. Mm-hmm. So like, you never really know at the start of these Thanksgiving tournaments, the start of the year, who really is the elite teams. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? You find out, but like, Purdue lost three starters from last year. So they were, you know, well, they're going to be okay, but it's a kind of let's see type of year. Mm-hmm. They're a top 10 team, no question. And not just because they beat us, but like their lineup, right? It's just what they give you offensively. They give you, like I said, they can shoot the ball. They got decent athletes inside, the big kid, obviously, and they're Big Ten, so they play hard. You know what I'm saying? It's just ingrained. They play extremely physical. So that's a, you know, that's a 3-2 or 1 seed, mm-hmm. easily. I mean, and that's not just because they beat us. They just put it on Duke as well. So, you know, I think the fans watching that game, I know, are frustrated, as we all are. Losing, but the way you lose, like, I mean, like, for example, like last year when we lost to Duke, I don't think people were that upset because it was like a well-played game. Mm-hmm. Both teams played hard, made runs, you know what I'm saying? Ball just didn't bounce our way. People get upset when we get blown out and kind of get pushed around like we did against Texas, and rightfully so. But that team has an entity that you don't see with a 7-4 kid. So, you know, obviously, you know, coming out of that game, you know, for me, I always joke, like, I'm upset for like 30 minutes and then I don't really care. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, but I don't, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't change my night, doesn't change my trajectory as a person or nothing. And it just right. doesn't, you know, I still call the game. The next game that's up, I call it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, it's like, well, okay.
I think the biggest disappointment was not being able to be able to play Duke again. I think everyone was
absolutely. Yeah. No, and I guarantee that ESPN was thinking the same thing. Yeah. Not that Purdue's not a good draw, but like, that's a big number that they would have got.
Yeah.
And those our styles match up better. You know, styles make fights or whatever they say all the time, and our styles are similar.
Yeah.
So I think I understand where people's frustration comes from that standpoint, but I always get a little bit offended. And I understand where what people talk about being a fan stands for fanatic.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's the end of the world if we lose to a team like that, you know. And it's like, we'll never go anywhere. And it's just like, it's November, man. And we're playing there's Malachi's never played in this program. Mm. Okay. Nolan played last year, but he's stepping in for Andrew Nembhard. I thought Nolan played great this weekend, and we'll talk about the Xavier game after this, but like, I thought he made a jump, confidence level, efficiency, not turning the ball over. Mm. Scoring the basketball as well. You know what I'm saying? Like, he made a jump.
Yeah.
Hunter didn't play a lot of minutes last year, so like, his minutes actually matter. I thought Ben Gregg did a good job of filling in for that third big spot, which has been wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Gonzaga always plays three bigs, or they have the last 6 years. And what I mean by that is, you know, your best guy probably plays 28 minutes. Your other starting four probably plays 25, 22, and then your third probably plays 8 to 15. Mm-hmm. Depends on how he's playing.
Yeah.
But it allows you to save yourself from, obviously, fatigue. You can play different defensively because you don't have to worry about fouling as much. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Because you got three guys that can kind of play that role. And, you know, that role was given to Efton Reed. He got first shot at it, and he hasn't played great. I think he still has a good player, still has a chance early in the season. But I think Ben Gray kind of solidified himself as like, hey, man, I can carve out 10 to 15 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. So that was a positive out of that game. He gave us a late surge, scored 9 points off the bench, fouled out. That's the other. She's like, don't foul.
Don't foul.
Yeah, just chill. Played great, but just like, hey, okay, now you got to play without fouling.
Is that what they were really afraid of with Timmy? Is like...
Like guarding Edie,
like, why, fouling, like, getting a lot of foul, getting like two fouls on him in the first half.
Yeah. And then also you got to remember, you know, I know this, people are gonna be like, you need to play both ends of the floor. It's like, you do, but if you have a guy that has to score 22 a night or whatever he does, and sometimes he can score 35, but he's super efficient.
Mm-hmm.
why burn him out on the defensive end?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And like, and that's what Anton does. He's like a defensive guy first. Doesn't mean he can't score. He's had some big games for us, mm-hmm. or, you know, 10 to 12 points where we don't run plays. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But like, that's why you have a Anton Watson, for him to go guard their best player and be a kind of a gnat and an annoyance, mm-hmm. you know, and draw charges. You know, like, I mean, my years, like my last year, I was averaging 28 and I played 38 minutes. Like, I guarded the third worst guy on the floor because I could rest.
Right.
And it's true, though. Yeah. Like, I mean, it even happens at the next level, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you get into games and you watch a series and you'll be like, why isn't Kevin Durant guarding Bradley Beal or whatever? And they're mm-hmm. like, he's got to go score 30 to win this series or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. He's going to guard the other guy and maybe he'll guard him half the game, but you know what I'm saying? So I think that's the thought process with Drew, and then in foul trouble, especially for bigs. And again, like, I love college basketball. It's a fun sport to watch, but some of these officiating are so bad, and it's not ever, and I don't even say it when it's Gonzaga versus somebody else. If you watch how we get a better whistle against some teams, like in the WCC, and it's just such ticky tack or letter of the law that it takes away the flow.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to protect against that too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you get Edie, you tell Drew, okay, Drew, keep him off his line. And let's say Drew extends just a little bit, but doesn't displace him. Guy in the sidelines go, whoop, displacement. He extended his forearm, foul. And it's like the flow. No, you know what I'm saying? So you burn that foul with somebody else.
Huh.
But it is, if you're watching the game and you're not as, I guess, astute to the strategy part, doesn't mean you don't know the game, right? That's kind of why, you know, you put him on their other guy.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then so, you know, you can save his body, you can save his energy, you know, for, you know, the fight down the road. But it is interesting because if you're like, well, why wouldn't you put, you know, 1A post versus 1A post against each other and let them match up?
I guess it's different too when you're playing a 7-4 guy.
Yeah,
like it's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen every game.
Yeah. No, exactly. And then like it's just like, okay, like, all right. But anyway, so you know, on to the Xavier game. I know people obviously, like we mentioned, were upset a little bit that we didn't play Duke, but Xavier's a well coached program. Sean Miller, used to be at Arizona, obviously had some issues, had to kind of didn't get fired, but had asked to leave that job. And we had a great series with them. And it was early, or it was like 2014, 15 or 16, you know, like the Wiltshire era, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Wiltshire and whoever else was on those teams during Guinness. I can't even, you know what I'm saying? They all mismatch, but like we played there and then we played them somewhere else, neutral, but like just some great games against each other because it was kind of the two best teams on the West Coast. I know the UCLA fans have argued, but not at that time, but like these are the two powerhouses on the West Coast for like recruiting.
Yeah.
So there was a mutual respect, but there was also like some bad blood between the two coaching staffs because there was, you know, you're recruiting the same guys.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, we're not. When I say we, I was right. Let me make sure I get to say this the right way, but like they were doing improper things.
Yeah.
And when you're recruiting against that, it's hard to be like, yeah, man, you can choose there too without being like, but they are, and maybe down the line, you might get some wins vacated or you might be able to go to a NCAA tournament kid, you know, as you're talking to a kid, but also it's like a, you know, you don't throw people under the bus unless you know for sure. So it was always like a funny relationship.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
You know, so when we got Xavier, I kind of chuckled because I was like, oh, because they know they're really familiar. They run the same stuff, similar actions. So I was like, oh, this is going to be a good game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not here to like start storylines or anything, but I knew that was in the back of their minds too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And not to the general public, but like, oh, these coaching staffs really don't like each other.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so,
yeah, I didn't realize Sean Miller was the coach at Xavier again. Mm-hmm. And they ran the ESPN did a little package last night, and he filled in at the end of the year last year. He came in and like during the NIT because they didn't make the tournament, mm-hmm. and he coached them to the NIT championship. And then I did not realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
we played him the first round my junior year.
Yeah.
And they gave us a problem and we had to beat them as a 3-14, but that's when they were more considered like a true mid-major.
Yeah.
They're still good, but like getting a 14 seed now they're mm-hmm. like, right. You know what I'm saying? Like now they could get a 6 seed or
yeah.
Below. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's more, oh, Xavier, you know what I mean? So
there was a time when I feel like Xavier and Gonzaga were like kind of, they were at the same level.
Yes.
And it was like, they were almost like the Gonzaga of the East.
Yes. Yeah.
And
no, exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, you know, at that time, you know, we were a 3 seed that year, but like not, you know, a few short years before that, we were a 6 seed and we were like 30-2 or whatever that year. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So like it's the perception was the, you know, West Coast Conference, small, same thing with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going into that game, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. You know, and I thought when we played that game, we played in Veterans again across the street from the Moda Center. And like I said, that place is a dump. God bless them. And people from Portland will be mad, whatever. I've had people like Dan Dick. I was like, oh, it's where I watch Portland Trailblazers game. Like, it's still a shithole. Doesn't mean it doesn't take your memory away from, but it's like, it's just old. It's just super old. Like, and it echoes. It's just bad.
Yeah.
And it was at 4:30 mm-hmm. and everybody's kind of like, not the team, but
right.
like you can just feel the atmosphere and you're like, all right, guys, this is going to be interesting to see like how these kids show up. And mm-hmm. Coach V always does a good job to, you know, get everybody going. And then that's player led too as well. Like we know Drew Timmy and his experience, mm. Julian Strother, obviously with Shear, to not let your guys do that and understand like, hey, we can still get some value out of this tournament. Mm. It's not always win or bust. So, you know, going into that game, they run similar actions of what we've done in the past. What I mean by that is dribble handoff with, you know, a late duck in with that big kid Nungi, who's a good player, ended up having 25 against us. They interesting if the hardcore Gonzaga fans, they had a kid that was freshman of the year, Suli Boom from San Francisco like 5 years ago, and I was like, man, I recognize that dude. And he's like, oh yeah, he played at San Francisco. It's just crazy. It's like still playing college basketball, you know what I mean, with the mm-hmm. COVID rules, you get an
yeah,
extra
the
year
COVID rules, yeah.
And he's Hooper. He had a good second half, didn't mm-hmm. play great. So going into that game, I was like, this is actually a chance to, you know, get back to like having a high scoring skilled first type of ball game. And that's what it turned out to be. I mean, mm-hmm. our guys did a good job there in the first half of kind of, you know, playing open. I thought Julian did a good job after starting 1-for-5. You know, I said it on air. Sometimes when you start slow, because he was 1-for-5 or 1-for-6, I mentioned it in the Purdue game. And, you know, as a player, you try not to, you know, start counting, but you're like, shit, I'm 2-for-10, my last 10 shots. Like, I better fucking make one of these.
Yeah. Did that go through your mind when you
try like, not to, yeah. but like you're not dumb.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're like, well, I haven't made one, you know, so like it can get to where, you know, you get a swing, you get a wide open and it creeps into your mind.
Mm.
The play that he got a driving kick by Nolan, who played fantastic that game as well, for a wide open three, went down. And then the very next play, he got that lob dunk.
Mm-hmm.
Got him going, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I said on air, and it's not just pat myself in the back, it's like, as a player, sometimes if you're struggling, go get a back cut, go push a guy in the back, get an offensive rebound, mm-hmm. cherry pick, just to see one go in, get the foul line. I know it's so cliche, but it's so true. Like, trip a guy, you know, like hold his jersey to get an offensive rebound and put it in, and then, yeah, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you can get yourself out of a slump by just seeing one go in. So I thought the first half was great. Both teams played good. It was, you know, up and down. You know, it was one of those where we were rolling first half, but we also, I knew they would make a run. And I know that sounds funny, but they were too skilled, is what I'm saying, of a team to not have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Starting the second half, I thought we started flat. to be honest, a little bit kind of on our back foot, you know, and then they made a run to get back into the basketball game to get it within 5 or 6. There was a stretch there that they went 11 for 15 and they just kept making shots. And they were, you know, closely contested. They weren't, you know, wide opens or defensive breakdowns like in the Purdue game. I think a lot of the Purdue game too was we had a lot of like bad breakdowns on screen and roll actions, tagging the roll, or like some of it was like, fuck, this is bad, like late, you know, just being dumb, not contesting the right way, you know, not reading the scouting report. Like, hey man, this guy, he shoots 2 a game and he's shooting 42%. Like he can make them. He doesn't shoot volume, but he can make them. And if you dare him, he'll make them, you know, especially when the team's rolling. So I thought when they took that 6-point lead, our guys did a good job of kind of refocusing, because it was, I think it was about 6-7 minutes late left in the second half when they took that 6-point lead. And then Julian hit that big time three when they went under on a, you know, kind of ball screen on the top, which is a big time mistake on a player like him. You got to go over every single time and make him put it on the floor and try to score inside. Knocks down that three. We get a scramble rebound, get another possession. There's a end of the clock, same situation. He hits another deep one. Then we're right back into the basketball game, only down one. And then we, you know, took control of it the rest of the game. But our guys made winning plays. I thought Ben Gregg, again, did a good job coming off the bench. Had a couple tips on rebounds. I know that sounds funny, but like made plays where guys, you know, that show up and don't show up in the stat book. You know what I'm saying? When you're watching film or you're figuring out minutes, like, well, if I put him in, at least he's going to, you know, get his hand on a ball and get us an extra possession or dive on the floor. All that stuff matters. So I thought he did a good job. Drew obviously did a good job of getting to his 22, only had 4 in the first half, but he scored 8 in a row, started the second half, you know, literally 4 for 4. But it's funny, we don't even talk about Drew anymore because it's like, well, it's, that's what he's supposed to do, right?
And right.
I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's like, well, this is your preseason player of the year and one of our all-time greats, so you need to, you know, score.
Yeah.
So score the ball, and he does that, and he got to a good percentage and was fantastic. But I was just impressed with, you know, Julian having a career high with 23, kind of getting out of that slump, ended up being, I think, 8 for 15. So he climbed his way out of, you know, shooting poorly to get to 50%, over 50% for the game. Shot the ball well from 3. I thought Nolan played good again. I can't speak enough of the growth that he's made in these last 3 games. Kentucky, the numbers don't jump out at you, but he was, you know, he had 4 points, but he was plus 25 in the plus minus. And if you're unfamiliar with that, you don't understand what that means. It's, there's a metric that they measure of when you're on the floor, how much either your team goes up or down. And so it's used for, some people say it's a fallacy in a sense, because like, well, what if you're in and the guy hits 6 threes in a row and yeah, you were plus 18, but you really didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. But it also measures, like, let's say you're in the game with a certain lineup and like a Ben Gregg and you make all these plays, but you took one shot and you got 4 rebounds, but you're plus 12. A coach can go, well, that lineup did something for me and he's part of that lineup.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So my point is Nolan has made jumps, in the last 3-4 games to kind of, I think, calm everybody down, from the outside, because he's replacing Andrew Nembhard, who's one of our better point guards that we've had in the last 5 years. Obviously drafted in the second round, but signed the biggest second round guaranteed deal because he's good. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like he could have been a first round pick easily, but he got a deal, so it doesn't even matter. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I was just impressed of how he handled himself this weekend. Kind of got him out of his, he wasn't poor me, but you could see that he was frustrated and he kind of played out of that. And he's just now trying to make plays off ball screens and making the right reads. He's excellent enough coming off those high ball screens and those little drop passes to Drew in rhythm. He had one to Anton, who Anton made that big floater. I think we were up 1. That's a big time shot, you know, especially when Anton, you know, is not asked to score. And sometimes he doesn't get the ball very much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's also kind of a ball swing guy, go set a pick and then pop or whatever. But like, He made a big time play with the pass. And then obviously Anton having the guts to step up and make that shot was huge. So I think the Xavier win is going to be a good, solid win. No, it's not a Duke. No, it's not Purdue win, but it's an NCAA tournament team. Mm-hmm. That's which they will be win. Right. And yeah, it's a team that can score. They had another 7-footer. That was good. Different from Edie, the Nungi kid played more on the outside, but he had a good game. He had 25. Was a good player. I was impressed with his movement as well.
But had some big threes too, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. No, and he shoots volume. He was shooting, I think the stat I saw was like 3.5 to 4 a game, and he was around 40%. So like he shoots them and makes them, you know. And then, like I said, it's not like 2 a game. He's shooting 4 or 5 and knocking down shots. So I thought we did a good job withstanding, you know, his push. And some of those, you know, when guy gets 25, it's not shitty defense. I'm just like, the guy had a good game, you know, like contested and kept the ball away from his normal spots. And he just finally made, you know, he made plays, made shots. So all in all, I was happy with the weekend in general. You know, I we wish we would have played Duke. Obviously we wish we would have played or beaten Purdue, but, you know, one good solid win, and then Portland State, you can say whatever you want about it. You know, it was good. And then guys made growth. That's what the way you got to look at it is, guys made growth. Like I said, Nolan, I thought Julian kind of got out of, or just got away from that bad game. I'd like to see Malachi Smith play better, be honest. He played good against Portland State, but he's got to play better off the bench.
Yeah, he does.
He just does. Yeah. I mean, he's averaged 21 at Chattanooga. Kate has a reputation of being a big time scorer, so he's got to play better. But he's kind of an X factor guy anyway. Mm-hmm. So if he doesn't play great, it necessarily doesn't kill you. But, you know, if I'm him, I'm trying to go get 8 to 12 a night.
I thought last night's game, I thought the whole weekend was interesting just because of, you know, ran the gamut of, you get the blowout, we get blown out. Gonzaga then has a 4-point win. Yeah. Like it kind of just got a little bit of everything this last three games.
Well, and it was nice too in that Xavier game is we had to, you know, make winning plays down the stretch and make free throws. Mm-hmm. We did. You know what I'm saying? We haven't seen that yet. And that's been a topic of conversation, at least I've heard, is how come these guys don't make free throws? And it's a good question. We're like, well, yeah, no, they need to make them. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's a real concern. And they had to break a press and, you know, catch the ball and not get fouled, not turn it over, or not lose it after getting fouled, and then go up, step up, and knock down free throws. So all in all, like I generally was pleased, you know, like I said, B on the weekend. B plus in certain areas. If you have those type of weekends, again, like I said, having guys make jumps is what you should want to see. Because they're going to have to play big time roles and minutes down the stretch, a la Nolan Hickman. And I thought he's kind of turned the corner on making the right plays, the right reads, and feeling good about himself. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought last night's game, too, against Xavier was especially nice to see, considering they shot 50% from the field.
Yep.
Both teams shot 50%. And, like, it was a good back and forth game. And we showed that we can, you know, we can win that game.
Yeah. Well, and we I think the number was +8 on the glass. I mean, we got our ass kicked against Purdue. It was -20. I mean, we got fucking our asses kicked on the glass. Yeah. And that was part of the reason they shot so well from three. You know, the hardcore basketball people understand this when I say the hardest action to guard action is a kick out three, offensive rebound, because you're always scrambling, you're out of position. So like, if you can't protect the defensive glass, you get your ass kicked. And that's part of the reason Purdue got 9 for 18. It was like offensive rebound. Shit, I'm out of position. It's kick out. Like we tell our guys, you get a kick out three. I tell them at 14-year-old girls AAU, like you kick out three, like step up and shoot that. You're not going to get a great shot, better shot than that. Mm-hmm. So paramount to go into those games and you know, get back on the right side of the rebounding battle. And we won +8 against Xavier. So, again, like I said, it was all in all good. And yeah, you know, Baylor coming up, and that's going to be a fun one. And
I think as a fan of Gonzaga, thinking about building a resume, going into WCC, like you want to have games like this so you can be tested.
Yeah.
And like the year that Gonzaga was undefeated almost going into the tournament, mm-hmm. we were like, have we been tested yet?
Yeah.
And like, it's like, it's never for fans. It's never like we want to go undefeated, or if we lose, the sky's falling.
Yeah.
I do think there are a lot of fans that are like us, and like, yeah, we're learning.
Yes.
And I think that's important to remember too.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like one of the themes this year was, for me, was guys that are stepping into new roles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the counter to that, it's like, well, they're high level recruits. Well, yeah, but it's a different game, obviously. And, you know, they're not playing, you know, the local kids that just got out of algebra class anymore in high school, you know what I'm saying? Where you just go score 30 with your eyes closed. But also, if you come to Gonzaga and you get minutes the year before, they tell you that what your role is going to be like next year. Mm. So like you shouldn't be wide-eyed, bushy-tailed. It's a mix. Mm. You get what I'm saying? Like going my freshman year, came off the bench, averaged 11, played 18 minutes a game. Probably should have played more. Anyway, I knew going into my sophomore year, I was going to be on the floor for 29 to 35 minutes and they were going to throw me the ball, mm-hmm. but I better be ready to fucking put the ball in the basket. I averaged 19 that year, but I knew mm-hmm. you better be efficient. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're going to get all the chances in the world, but that summer you better be prepare yourself going into that. And I did, mm-hmm. and our guys do, but also my point is there's no surprises.
Yeah.
They're not going to be like, you're going to play 12 minutes and then all of a sudden less than an injury or something, but like all of a sudden like, hey man, you got to score 18 a game and you're not really prepared for that, or you didn't try to mold your game or try to improve areas on the shots you're going to get or the actions you're going to run. You get well informed of that mm-hmm. Going into it.
Yeah. Well, looking towards this week's game, heading into Sioux Falls mm-hmm. To play Baylor, who's 5-1. They've lost to number 5 Virginia. They beat number 19 UCLA by 5. I didn't know this, but Baylor and Gonzaga are the only two programs to be ranked number 1 in the last three seasons. So
I didn't know that either.
So how big is this game against Baylor?
Obviously, you know, the storyline will be the championship game that we lost a couple of years ago. So that's going to be on everybody's mind. I think it's another opportunity to add to the tournament resume. And mm-hmm. it's another opportunity to play a Power 5, try to punch you in the mouth team, didn't do well against Texas, mm-hmm. and didn't do well against Purdue in that style. So I think it's a real gut check moment for our guys to be like, hey, like I just said, you better win the glass. They think you're soft, mm-hmm. you know, those type of deals. They're going to push you on your cuts. You're going to have to fight for every inch to get your catches at 19.9 instead of 25 feet, all that stuff I talked about in the first episode with the Texas game or whatever, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, it's a real opportunity for us. Not only is to win, you know, have a tournament like win, or a team that, you know, is going to be good and make the tournament, sort of KenPom and RPI, but also like a core group, like feel good about yourself that you can go out and play that style of game mm-hmm. and beat those type of teams, which we can. It's not like foreign to Gonzaga, right?
Yeah.
It's just, we haven't performed it well this year. In years past, we've blown those teams out because we just outran them. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm not saying that as a, oh, we've never done this.
Yeah.
2022 is what I'm saying.
You know
what
yeah. I mean?
So it's going to be interesting. It's in Sioux Falls. I have no fucking idea why the game's there.
It has to be. I mean,
no clue.
It must be some deal that the NCAA or Gonzaga did with that, because they played a game there 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I forget against two.
I heard it's a good facility, but I'm just like, Phoenix or Vegas, please. Just right. for our fans. I'm not even talking about for right. me, but like, it's just like Phoenix or Vegas. Like, and if you're a Baylor fan, they're thinking the same thing. Like, oh, I can take a nonstop to, you know, everybody gets a nonstop to Phoenix or Vegas. I mean, every airport in the planet probably has one of those, right?
Yeah. I'd be curious to know how many Gonzaga fans from Spokane are will be traveling to Sioux Falls to see this game.
That's going to be, it's going to be interesting. I mean, it was interesting in Portland. You know, you'd think that we draw there, and we always have good fans. That's not what I'm saying, but it was a little bit lighter than I thought this year. Just as a whole tournament. I don't know if it's the venue. Some people were saying the Oregon State game on Saturday, you know, that for some people that wipes out their fun budget, which you get, you know what I'm saying? Like if you're bringing a family, you got to make a choice.
Yeah.
I was like, well, okay.
I heard that they were giving away those tickets last night. And so the vibe in that, I mean, you could feel the vibe just watching it on TV. Like it was quiet. You know, there were some Zag fans there. So when they were going on runs, you could kind of hear a little bit, but it was still very, very quiet.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, and also too, you know, Sunday, and I get it. It's Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend. Like, it's time to get home, guys. You know, work and school starts back up and all that. I get that. I wasn't disappointed, but I was kind of not shocked. I don't know what the correct term is, because it was like, well, it is Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
It is big event. You know, sometimes when you go in these big gyms too, it's also like, well, shit, when you go to these massive places, it's more full than you know, the tent's better than you think.
Yeah.
But also I was like, it's a little bit light in here, like echo, you know, and you can kind of hear the calls from the bench. Normally you shouldn't be able to hear them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay. But I think the Baylor game is going to be a great opportunity for us to, like I said, play that style and see how we fare. You know, and then we got Alabama coming up later down the road too. Yeah. So, but it's getting down to where the quote unquote bigger games are not on the schedule besides like St. Mary's and hopefully BYU is better this year. But, you know, then we head into conference.
Yeah. I feel like this game, I mean, try not to be too hyperbolic about it, but like, do you, as a resume builder, winning this game or losing this game could be a kind of a big difference of Gonzaga getting a number one, number two seed in the tournament. Do you think, is that true? Or is that?
A lot of it has to do with, opposing team strength, the schedule, all the KenPom numbers.
Yeah.
So, you know, as the February starts to happen, you can kind of get a better feel on what your early wins mean. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So like if you're a Gonzaga fan, you should be rooting for Michigan State. Mm-hmm. You should be rooting for Texas. You should be rooting for Purdue the rest of the year. And Xavier.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time. We do it in conference. Like, we want St. Mary's to be undefeated when we play them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we beat them, we want them to win the rest of the games until we get to the conference tournament. And then we beat them again. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, like, it's like, go Gales all day, you know?
Yeah.
I'm basing that off of Baylor's going to make the NCAA tournament. They always do. Mm-hmm. And Scott Drew, he's a great coach. So, like, you just have to bank that game is going to help you down the road unless something crazy happens.
Right.
So yeah, it'll help us, resume wise. That makes sense.
Yeah. Staying in the WCC, I have to ask, did you have an opportunity to watch the Portland Pilots this weekend?
I did.
What is your opinion on them? They're playing really good. They've won some, I mean, they beat Villanova.
Yeah.
They played UNC tough. And then they, you know, they almost beat Michigan State last night.
Yeah. No, Shante Liggins coaches those guys hard. They play hard. It's the second year there. So I you can tell that there's a cohesiveness to their group and some understanding of how they want to play. That's all I'm going to say.
We'll save it for the, when we play them.
There's some issues. I think we've had with them when they was at Eastern and now, and not in anything like behind the scenes, just stuff on their style, but you can take it how you want.
Okay. So some Gonzaga questions. I wanted to ask, who is the biggest X factor on Gonzaga right now?
It's a good question. I think first off, no question, like Anton, when he plays well, we play better. When he gives us 8 to 12 points a game and he's flying around like the Kentucky game, he was phenomenal. You know what I'm saying? Played 38 minutes. Did a good job against Shiwei. Shiwei still got to his numbers, but he took him out of the game early. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I think Anton is the first obvious answer, mm-hmm. and he has been the last 3 years. Secondly, so for guys coming off, I always view it as guys that come off the bench. Maybe that's wrong because I've been in that position before, but I think Malachi's got to be a guy that gets got to be able to put the ball in the basket a little bit better. And that's not like to bury him, but, like I said, he has a reputation of being a scorer. He's proven that. Mm-hmm. He's a reputation of a shooter. He's got to come in and he gets Portland State. He goes 5 for 5 from three. Well, let's start going 2 for 4 and, mm-hmm. And then 4 for 6 or 5 for 7 and giving us 11 to 13 in 18 minutes. That'll help us, right? Mm-hmm. And that negates, let's say Anton doesn't score it, still has a good floor game, or let's say Nolan doesn't score it or Sheard, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That eliminates the pressure that is put on the perimeter players. Now, does he have the ability? Yes. I wouldn't say a player that I don't think has the ability to be an X factor, to be one. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see him play better, to be honest, because when he can fill it up, it helps us.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully he can get it figured out. It's tough switching to that role. I'll give him that, because last year he had the ball in his hands all the time. I didn't watch him at Chattanooga, obviously, but they made the NCAA tournament. They were good. I think they were like a 14 seed, so mm-hmm. like a good small league team. He averaged 22, got buckets. Now you're coming off the bench cold, and that it's hard when you don't just throw you the ball and go, okay, you can shoot pull-up jumpers, and it's like you kind of have to run what we do. So I think he's still trying to figure that out, but he can be an X factor. He puts the ball in the basket.
Hmm. Last question before we end the show. Is this team going to ride and die by the three all season?
No, I don't think so. I think it obviously helps when we make them, and there's a thing called effective field goal percentage. And so it's a weird kind of math equation, per se, is the best way to describe it. So like if you shoot 50% from two, but you shoot like 38 to 41 or something like that from three, it ends up being like 50% on the attempts that you take.
Mm.
So the thought process in the last 10 years, not just at Gonzaga, but in basketball as a whole, is shooting a lot of threes, if they're good shots, not a bad thing. Because some nights, let's say you go 10 for 30, but you still get 30 points out of it. You only shot 33% or whatever the hell it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the effective, you're probably shooting 45% from the field.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not terrible.
Right.
So, but you're right. Like Purdue, we shot it like dog shit mm-hmm. from three and we look bad. But look at the Xavier game. We're struggling, and then we just go bang, bang, bang. Mm-hmm. And then we're back up and then back in control of the game. They're such dagger shots. But look at our personnel. Like Nolan's a 3-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like come off pin downs, but like ball screens or swings. Julian, that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Rashear is kind of what he does. Hunter's gotten better at it. He's not a volume shooter. Anton can make an open three.
Mm-hmm.
So I get people's frustration, but that's the way the game is, man.
Yeah.
Like, and if you look around the country, people shoot a lot of threes where 10 years ago you get subbed out. And it's just a different game, like it or not. It's here to stay, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Steph Curry changed all that,
right? Yeah, exactly. Steph Curry absolutely changed the whole deal. And then if people follow suit.
Yeah.
And it's not like that's the only way to win.
Right.
Absolutely. But also, I can counter that and be like, we don't just shoot fucking three. We throw it to the best post in the country. So like a lot of times people argue like we play kind of slow because we throw it into Drew and he gets into his shit, but it's slow. It's slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So...
Yeah,
I can counter that one easy
for sure.
Well,
it's about all the time we have. I have one final question. I want to re-ask a question from last week because I wrote it wrong.
Oh, okay.
Someone was asking you. It's from Welcome to the Fist Fight. He wanted to know, how was your game in junior high? Like, obviously, you're probably a really good ball player all throughout. But like, was there? Yeah, what was a junior high Adam Morrison playing basketball like? Well, you shouldn't just. All threes?
No, I wasn't a great shooter from three because, again, we didn't play. Like, I was a mid-range kid, you know, I guess. And I was always a little bit taller, so I could, shoot, like, step backs and stuff right. at that age. I mean, not like crazy, but like for seventh, eighth grader. Yeah. And I was like I scored my whole life, and that's not even trying to be
right
weird or anything, but I just did, you know what I'm saying? Like growing up, like I was kind of just, my dad was like, you need to score. All right. You know, like,
yeah,
it's just how it was. So yeah, my game was good. It was good. At YMCA too. So if you want to ask that too.
My kid plays in the YMCA, and they do this thing where they just take the ball down, and then he always passes. I'm like, dude, just shoot the ball.
Just shoot it.
Don't even pass the ball right now.
You can learn to pass later in life. It's so true. My son is six. You know, he had a game where he had 14. Of course, I'm the only one counting. And, that's awesome. You know, so his mom's like, he should pass more. I'm like, no. Should not. And we have another kid on his team that had a game like that where the kid probably had 18. Wasn't passing, but he was scoring. And his dad was like, and I just walked over. He's like, dude, don't. We'll teach him later. Like, don't. It's not being selfish, but like, you never take away a scorer's mentality because you can't teach it. Mm-hmm. So if they have it, you figure out how to pull the reins back at the right times. But at this age, like, go score. So yeah, it's fun. But yeah, thanks for, you know, doing the recap episodes. It's great to, you know, bounce the ideas off of you. And thanks to our sponsors. We'll, you know, have the Baylor recap. Then we'll go into some of the meat of our UW game that's coming up. And, you know, the actual home games coming up. And then obviously Alabama. Hmm. And then we got Killian Tilly coming on. Later down the road in one of these episodes,
agreed
to an interview, so it's gonna be fun. So appreciate everybody coming on. Thanks to the sponsors. Let's do it again.
The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is produced independently and locally in Spokane, Washington by Spokecast Studios. Our city, our stories. Visit www.spokecast.com to learn more about how you can start your very own podcast today. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese and supported by Delish Hamburgers and the Spokane Workers Co-op. Thank you to Jinx Universe and Position Music for letting The Perimeter use the song Let's Do It Again from Jinx's album, Make It Look Good.